woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Hello, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Ali, Mr. Mayweather. S&P futures are up 11, Dow futures up 89, NASDAQ futures up 28. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning, I am fine. Hey, do you wonder, you know, every time I listen to that opening, I'm thinking, you know, some metal band or something is bound to come up with the, is bound to name itself Illinois Nazis.
Maybe they already have. You never know. I
wouldn't be surprised.
What are you,
or at least go with, I hate Illinois Nazis.
So what are you, you becoming the today's Del Shannon as I walk along, I wonder?
I wonder about all kinds of things. In fact, you know, I spend, it seems like, roughly a third to half of any given day just shaking my head.
It seems like you do more...
Like hard on the neck.
You do more of that, don't you?
It is damned hard on the neck. Hey, and hard on the neck at your age, Matt.
Yeah, you do... Matt and I were just talking on the way in about this alleged day, Big Ten day, everybody's supposed to be playing everybody Saturday, and how this thing's all falling apart. So how many games they got left? Maybe three?
I'd have to look, but that sounds about right, because I know it sounds like about half of them have been canceled, because in the Indiana-Purdue situation, both have COVID cases, or just don't want to play.
I think it's probably more to the latter, but that's an accusation.
I wouldn't.
Well, I think you're right, and I think they're looking at the situation and saying, well, I may have a few COVID cases, I probably could play anyway, and if it really mattered, I would. But in the meantime, you know, you're just looking at it and saying, why? Yeah. You know what? What's the point?
Kevin, without putting as our expert, accent expert, without putting you on the spot, even though I'm doing that, what do you suppose the value is to a game without fans, with all the expenses involved in travel and everything, for a, I'm going to say, third-tier TV game? I mean, I don't even know who, obviously you have the betting angle, which adds some, but I mean, I honestly can't even make a stab at the math. Whenever I do that, can't do that, it always bothers me. I mean, what is the Michigan-Iowa game worth to anybody if they played it? I mean, is it a big winner? It's just a filler? It's they owe ESPN? Or what's the deal?
Well, I don't know which network was going to broadcast it. I suspect that in the Big Ten's minds, you know, the Big Ten... Puba's minds, that they were thinking that they would be able to fill the day on the Big Ten Network and work around whatever basketball they have scheduled. And in that regard, look, especially if you don't get the announcers out of the studio, which a lot of the games have you know, a lot of the broadcasts have done lately, if you don't get any of the names broadcasters out of the studio, the production cost of this is really, really low. So you don't have to sell a lot of commercial time to make it worth your while, and they're running the Big Ten Network anyway, so are you going to run that, or are you going to run volleyball games? You know?
Well, I guess maybe this is more of a question for Maddie. Given what's happened this year, what is the status of Big Ten Network, ACC Network, Marquee Network, even Sports Chicago Network. I mean, are they all just flat on their ass, or are they somehow hanging in there? I mean, obviously, if you get paid by your cable people, then you're probably okay. But you don't. Do you have any? I mean, that's this weird part of this cable is. I don't think I get to shave the Marquee part off mine and get my like $3 back a month. I think I'm still paying it.
Yeah, I suspect that in a case of like Marquee, because it's the first year, they probably expect it to lose money anyway and have enough reserve to last a little while and see what a quasi-normal year is going to look like for them. If you start looking at the Big Ten Network, the ACC Network, which is still relatively new, I would imagine that they've taken some hits. But again, I don't know how much. They've played most of their games. They've had programming. The Big Ten started later than say the ACC or the SEC, but they've had programming every week. Having games on the air is not their problem. It's the stands, and that's where the schools really make a lot of money. Is you sell 80,000 tickets at. Oh, I don't know, pick an average price, $70 for an average price, so some a little higher, maybe some a little lower. That's a lot of money, six times a year.
And that's like money 40 million, yeah. Getting. 40 mil's a lot of money even today.
Well, and then throw on things like parking, on merchandising, all the crap that people buy when they're on campus for a game weekend. And then you start looking at the businesses that live off of that, so hotels, restaurants, and so on, who are hurting anyway, and they just, they all just missed out on their prime season.
All the crap people buy when they go to a game. What did you just throw our friend Dave Murphy under the bus?
Absolutely.
Maddie, every year.
Absolutely. Dave buys more crap than anybody I know when he comes to campus every year.
He's got how many grandkids and everything else? I mean, they're all getting like five presents, all with Notre Dame. From underwear,
well, he
socks,
has to go back to USC territory, so he's got to make sure that they are decked out properly. So I think it's a noble mission.
He literally brings an empty suitcase, right?
yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, otherwise, I don't know. He's got a big bag on the plane. Scary stuff. I got to believe the bookstore is not doing so well this year. Just say, oh, they did.
I got to believe so too. I haven't been there, so I don't know. I could just as easily be saying I haven't been there in normal times. So
yeah, that's the truth.
But I haven't. I haven't even been over to campus much lately, and that's probably my bad because it's a good place to go for a walk.
Well, especially with nobody there.
Yeah.
Well, the kids actually. Well, they're not coming back till when? Like February 1st or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
We were talking a little bit on the way, and as I was listening to all the. I won't say losers, the people chasing these vaccines all around the country now. Again, as people know, I am one of the guys that actually has been reading, all about the, not from the total chemical side, because I wouldn't understand it, but the innovation that this vaccine is in terms of just being one protein versus the whole string, so your body's not actually getting this. So anybody who says they're going to catch COVID from the vaccine, it looks to me like that's categorically impossible because your body's never seeing the whole string. Anyway, it looks like...
No, but what you may catch is you may get some symptoms from it.
Well, sure. You get symptoms, kind of from anything. But
you get them from flu shots, too, yeah. Sometimes. Some people do. I never have.
It kind of depends. One year I did and one year I didn't. I think I did on the swine flu, the original one. That's why I didn't take a flu shot for 20 years. That was the original swine flu from the 70s. But... I still, every day, Kevin, I just can't, and I'm obviously getting nowhere with this. I don't understand how, from somebody who's a COVID survivor, knock on wood, and has taken the antibody test, I'm right where I'm going to be, hopefully, after a vaccine. And yet there's millions of people like me in this country that don't even get a word during the day. I mean, are we at least trying to not give the vaccine to people that have already had it at least for a little while? Because why would we? I mean, they're talking about California with a 1,000,007 confirmed cases, which, given the, you know, I don't know what the multiplier is now. It's probably not 10 anymore, but it's probably at least 2 to 3. So say 4 million people in California have already had it. Well, there's 4 million people you don't have to worry about for a while, right? Why am I the only person that, or other people on the show that even brings that up? I mean, there's, I mean, if
well, where I find it very strange is that they I keep hearing the people go on TV now, the medical people, who say, well, we have to vaccinate 70 to 80% of the people before we achieve herd immunity. No, you don't have to do that, because how many million have already had it?
Well, if you let's put it this way. If you have no regard for who had it versus who didn't when you pass out the vaccines, then yeah, you probably got to do 70 to 80. But if you realize that, you know, 30 to 40% of the people in some areas have already had it, then you only have to do 40% there if you pick the other side to get to the same spot, right?
That would seem to be, you know, kind of pretty standard math to me, but...
I don't understand why in a hospital, especially in a hospital, because I got to believe, since I think that's where I caught mine, and that's where Kenny Polcari says he caught his, and everybody, well, a lot of people that I've talked to that have had it, I have a few people that listen in the UK, in fact, that email me once in a while. They're all three are ladies, all three have had it, all three's husband worked in the hospital, and they got it from their husband. So why you don't, because you can turn around the antibody test in roughly a day. Why in the hospital, if you've got 300 people that you're worried about, why you don't give everybody an antibody test on Tuesday, get the test back on Wednesday, and vaccinate those who don't have the antibodies on Thursday? I'm befuddled by that, Kevin. To me, that's so simple and so straightforward. Where am I wrong?
Well, the only thing I'll say is that given what people are at least saying when surveyed about whether they will get it and when they're willing to get it, we are going to be, what are they saying, by the end of December, we're going to have like 50 million doses out there. And, you know, by somewhere ahead of March, we're going to have 200 million doses out there. So maybe in that regard, you don't have to worry about prioritizing right now. That you prioritize older people and at-risk people right now, but people are going to self-prioritize for you. So maybe that's the case, and you just, you know, it's not a problem you have to solve yet.
If I didn't, we haven't had our buddy Wayne on in a while, but if I was a conspiracy guy, somehow, some way.
Wayne makes you think conspiracy guy, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, somehow, some way, this is...
Me too,
this is a way. Yeah, this is a... What did, tell the guy's name, William Kennedy? Events were in the saddle and they drove the men hard. This has all the momentum of some people want to be in charge and want everybody to have this thing cataloged, and you're not going to be able to do anything, work or anything, without this vaccine.
Without your papers.
Without your papers.
Let me see your papers.
Your Star of David, for lack of a better term, which is pretty awful. They're talking about, I was reading yesterday, can employers require people to get a vaccine? Can people do this? Can you require this to enter your building? Can you require a badge saying you got the vaccine before you get to a Cub game or a opera? Kevin, if that was the end of it, I'm, you know, given there was a pandemic, it's never the end of it. It's always the beginning of it. Right?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, we're talking a pretext for implementing things that many have wanted to implement for a long time.
Sure. I mean, it's the skinny people don't want to pay hospitalization for the fat people. People who don't smoke don't want to pay it for the smokers. People who are skinny and high-stressed, I'm sure you can find a fat guy who doesn't want to pay for them. You know, I mean, but once you get on that road, how do you stop? The road is sloped away and it's slippery. Am I right?
Well, I think so, but you're preaching to the choir here. You need somebody who tells you you're wrong if you want to have a good discussion about it.
Well, that's true.
You know, I asked Jeff Joseph when I filled in for you last week, Chief, about this, and he surprisingly to me said he had no issue with flashing an app to get into stuff for a while. showing just in the interest of opening back up sporting events and restaurants and bars without issue. He said he had no issue with getting some sort of authorization in an app that you flash to get into something. And I was surprised to hear that answer from him.
Well, and we can ask Jeff to talk about that more. My problem isn't so much, you know, doing it to get us jump started. It's because my problem is that it's never going to go away. And I'll give you a different example, because I don't know if I did this on the air or via email to some of you guys, but I knew it the minute that Gretchen Whitmer in November, mid-November, issued the some new restrictions in Michigan that tightened everything back up in Michigan, and I knew that was, you know, it's just going to be for 3 weeks. There's no way that she was going to do that. So what they were, you know, what I suggested was, here's where I was wrong, is I said, the numbers are going to come down, which, by the way, they did. And she's going to say, see, it's working. We need to do it longer.
Right.
But instead, the numbers were coming down, and she said, well, we haven't reached the 14 days after Thanksgiving, and we expect a spike from Thanksgiving. So I have to extend it. Now, the spike still hasn't come, and she hasn't rescinded it and said, well, there wasn't a spike after all, so we can back off. And that's my problem, is we never back off. We don't back off, and that's why I have a problem with doing
when they say that they're expecting a spike, there better be one, because they are expecting it, and there's no backing off, Kevin. They if the spike doesn't show up, what happened to the spike whenever we ran on the field at Notre Dame? There was a spike. You ever heard of that?
Oh yeah, that was going to be a super spreader event. Didn't happen.
I'm just asking because I tend to agree with you guys on this, but to Jeff's point, if it is something to jumpstart, you know, and make everyone feel comfortable, and all it is you get vaccinated for the first year or whatever, you know, they assume it lasts that first round, and you flash an app for the next however much time, 6 months, whatever. What is the next thing that could happen from that? Like, what is the worst case scenario that happens?
I'll just, first of all, my hair stood up on the back of my neck when you said make people feel comfortable. Well, I'm going to say right now, is how politically incorrect is this? If I were to go anywhere really now, because it's all over the place, but certainly in some of the, shall we say, the hoods, I want people naked to make me feel more comfortable, because I want to make sure they're not packing. That makes me feel comfortable. Now, do I get to do that to somebody?
No, that doesn't really.
Have you seen most people? I don't want to see them.
But I'm saying, how do I know?
So you think that everyone's going to have to be naked? That's going to be the result?
No, no. I
understand your point, but that doesn't. Has nothing to do with what I asked. I'm wondering.
It has everything to do. No.
No. If restaurant owners and bar owners and professional team owners and government officials that run public places, whatever, if they all say to reopen, we require you to enter our place. We require you to flash an app. Okay, I don't love that at all. I agree with you guys. I worry about that, but I wonder what is the slippery slope.
It slips the idea from you taking care of yourself to forcing other people to do stuff that you think. I'll give you an example. When I traded in the OEX pit, there's 350 people jammed into a very small spot, and I mean, I've been coughed on, spit on. I mean, there are people cough right in your ear, for God's sake. Now, if it comes down to, I walk up to the top of the steps, and I say, I hear Matty Weber coughing down there, get him the hell out of here. Unless I get a signed note from his doctor that he is. Do I get to clean out the people that I think might be able to infect me, or do I just say, hey, I'm over 60 now, this is a young man's game, so many people are coughing, I better not walk in. Does it become my responsibility to take care of myself, or do I get to tell other people what to do? That's the line we're crossing here. You know,
part of that is then what you're saying is there's a personal responsibility angle, and I agree. But there's also, as far as I'm concerned, it's who's mandating this. If a private business wants to say, I need proof of your vaccination before you come in here, that's fine. I can choose to not go there.
Yeah.
And say it's none of your business whether I've been vaccinated or not, and I'm not... I'm not symptomatic, contagious, or anything else, and if you don't want me in your place, that's fine. I'll go someplace where they don't care. And you're seeing that a lot in the areas that don't have areas of the country that don't have mask mandates, where some places are still requiring them and saying you need to have a mask to come in here, and other places are saying no. And people who don't want to wear a mask go to the places that say no.
And it comes down to liability,
you know,
too, man.
I'm fine with that. You know, any business is welcome to have its own rules for what gets you in there. And as long as it's not racial discrimination or sex or gender or something like that, I'm cool with it.
But if it's a problem,
on the other hand, when we have the government mandating it and the government controlling it, that's just too darn intrusive for me, because now they're accumulating personal information about me. And we already have too much personal information accumulated by the government. And it's always easily dismissed. For instance, the stuff that they gather about our cell phone activity, and then they say, well, it's just the metadata, we're not listening to your calls. Well, you know what metadata is? Calling number, receiving number, duration of the call, date and time, and all that. So what do you know about me if I get a call from a psychiatrist's office every Tuesday afternoon?
We'd expect
you know
that.
I'm getting a reminder call for my Wednesday appointment. What do you know about me if I play, you know, if I get a call from a, well, I don't, but what do you know about a woman if the call she gets is from an obstetrician and then immediately afterwards starts making phone calls to places like Planned Parenthood? Well, you know she's pregnant and she's looking at an abortion. Whose business is this? This is, you know, that's too intrusive, and so I do not want government involved in that kind of an activity, because now, you know, especially because state and local governments have shown their stripes, have shown us how much control they want and that they think is appropriate, I sure as hell don't want to start giving them all that information.
Plus, it's a finable offense, and I look at our business. And you know, we started in the in this particular business, 1991 or 90, whatever it was. There were rules, and there were always, well, in my mind, there were always rules on how you treated customers and people. I mean, I knew that when I was seven, I hope. And you treated your customers like they're family, for God's sake. I mean, you always did. I mean, you're always going to find people that were a little tough to deal with, but that's the nature of the world.
You've got family members that are tough to deal with, too.
Yeah, no kidding. But that's the nature of the world. But now it's down to... You can't make a mistake. If I were to screw up, well, now somebody, there have to be procedures. There have to be written procedures. There has to be supervision. You can't, you think you can go to the can by yourself, Matty, but if you were a FINRA guy, you'd need supervision, you'd need procedures, written procedures, and by the way, you'd probably need a witness. Now, I don't think you really want to do that, do you? And probably don't think you need it. But now, if you're a regulator, you don't realize how much you need it. You mean, believe me, you need it in the can. Even though you think you do fine in there. It's potty humor, but it's really the truth. So now it's not just, and I'm surprised Jeff would say something like this, not because of that it's not necessarily a good idea for a while, but it's never going to end there. Now, if Matty Weber's Opera House decides that you're going to have you and your bro to open one of these things up, and you decide, well, I'm going to make sure that everybody has an app, okay? You're not going to be able to just do that. I mean, that sounds innocent. Well, we'll just check everybody when they come in. All of a sudden, I'm an ass, and I walk in and I say, geez, I caught COVID at Matty Weber's place. And they're going to say, so the lawsuit's going to land, and they're going to say, okay, you say, you and your bro say that you're going to have this selection process. You're going to check people's apps. By the way, what are your procedures? What is your training for your people to make sure that every single person that comes in here gets checked? And by the way, there's no way somebody can slip through. And by the way, if you've got Thomas doing it at the door, who's supervising Thomas? Does Thomas know the procedures? Does he have a copy of them on him? And how has Thomas been trained? I mean, it never ends there. So now all of a sudden, you've what you've done is basically stuck little Matty in the guillotine. And said, I'm going to guarantee to you that nobody in this place has COVID, is what you're saying. because that's what the lawyer on the other side is going to say. It's not as simple as flash me your app on the way in. It's not nowhere near that. Think of checking people's IDs. You don't put Thomas at the door to check ID. Wait a minute. What is your procedure? How have your people been trained? Somebody gets in here. How do you get them out? I mean, it never ends there. So where I'm coming from is, if I all of a sudden, and you know, someday it'll be like this. Maybe it happens to everybody. You know, I'll be in chemo someplace. I'll be on oxygen, and if I get a cold, I'm dead. Well, you know what? It's up to me to not walk into the Tripoli Tap on a Boston game because somebody in there probably has a cold. It's not up to me to walk up to the door and say, Nick, get anybody out of here who hasn't been checked by the doctor in the last 2 hours. That therein lies the problem that I see. I mean, does that make any sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Yeah, those are the answers that I was kind of looking for. I think Jeff's point was not necessarily the government involvement piece. That was just something that, you know, I wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on. But more, he would have no problem flashing an app to get into a place.
If it was just that simple. But now he doesn't...
Well, he described it as it would be that simple.
Okay, but he obviously hasn't owned the place. Because if he owned the place now, and somebody thinks they caught it in there, and you have a policy saying that you're going to protect... You're essentially saying you're going to protect people from getting it on these premises. Once you do that, you might as well drop the pants. Right? Because you can't... S&P Futures up 9.25 now, NASDAQ Futures up 23. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. He's Mr. Matt Weber. By the way, Kevin, Maddie doesn't know it, but when I'm done with this, I'm going to challenge Maddie because, first of all, he's getting to the point where he's smart enough to know all this stuff, so I'm going to challenge him in regards to what he just asked the question, how he should know. He should have known the answer long before I gave it to him, by the way. And he probably did. SP Peters up 9, NASDAQ Peters up 25. We're building on the rally yesterday. Huge rally yesterday. I think if we just keep going where every day we're encouraging people for this package, we could be, where are we in S&P? 3,700. I think we could be 20,000 in 4 weeks. Just every day we're encouraging. To the point where we lose all sense of value. Dow up 68 points.
Well, we have till the 26th before stuff expires.
Yes. DAX up 202, that's 1.5%. FTSE up 61.9%. We're giddy over the 1.3 trillion euros over in Europe. CAC around up 28.5%. But we're sticking to the story that we're going to go borrow it from people at negative interest rates. And boy, if you believe that one, I got a bridge for you. A Nikkei up 69.2%. Shanghai down 25 cents. Why couldn't they have made it even? But that's flat. Hang Seng up 253. That's a full 1%. Remember, they were down yesterday when everybody else was up. Very bizarre. Just a review of yesterday's big rally. Dow up 337. That's 1.1%. S&P up 47, 1.3%. NASDAQ up 155, 1.2%. Today we've got the bonds, 0.92. Again, trying to go to 1%, but every time they get up here, they get smacked back down. We'll see if they break through this time. One minus 0.56. Japan is actually 0.00, so they're barely hanging to the upside. We've got oil down 4 cents to 47.58. Brent down 5 cents, 50.71. Natural gas down 5 cents, 2.63. Evidently, the alleged really cold winter coming toward us, they were saying at CNBC yesterday, do you want to be a big buyer of natural gas? Well, not this morning. RBOB unchanged at 132. We had gold. We had a big rally yesterday, up another $8 today. 1863. Silver up 65 cents. 25.29. It's a big move. It's almost 3% move in silver. And yes, there happened to be some long silver. So yes! Yes! You shouldn't be shameless cheering like that, Matty, but you have to once in a while. Copper up a penny, 356. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're very quiet still on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No delays, accidents, or stalls to speak of. So enjoy a nice, quiet Wednesday morning commute. Weather today, similar to yesterday, although we will have a couple of flurries potentially later this morning, and then again in the early evening. We'll reach a high of just 34. Cloudy skies with a chance of flurries. Right now it's overcast and 30 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine and a high of 64 today. Right now it's clear and 37. In sports, college hoops last night, number 13 Illinois had no problem in their Big Ten opener, blowing out Minnesota at home 92-65. Number 12 Wisconsin hosted Loyola last night, and Loyola hung around but lost to the Badgers 77-63. And lastly, Northwestern blew out Quincy 100-48. Chief.
So you ready?
Yep.
So for those that don't know, and I won't give any names or anything, Maddie, in addition to being a spectacular producer in the show and a good friend, and not a bad softball player, although I haven't seen him pitch, I'll bet I could give him a few pointers there still. of course, if you listen to him, he's never pitched a bad, never pitched a bad pitch, Kevin.
I've a couple bad pitches, a couple bad innings, no bad games.
Okay, no bad games.
Hey, I'll tell you, I'm terrible. You know, if you need somebody who's going to throw strikes, I'm not your guy. I was so bad that my teammates wouldn't let me throw batting practice to them.
God, that's pretty bad. But Maddie, his real job, he's a big star at a firm that essentially does credit card security and does all kinds of things with, if you have credit cards and take them essentially on computers and all those kinds of things, it's a real big deal. It's a real big deal. And Maddie's firm is one of a couple that will help people and essentially put all this stuff together, procedures and so place. All right, so I'm going to tell you, Maddie, when a credit card started out, you had a little thing that you pushed the thing down and the raised numbers became in there.
Knuckle buster.
You tell me how things can get from point A to point B.
As far as the technology coming
in? Well, not just the technology, but the rules, the regulations. If somebody has a bad credit card, how it's on the firm now, it's not on the person. It's all kinds of stuff that has happened in that industry since day one. I can only imagine that if somebody comes out and says, everybody in our place, We're socially distancing. It's in Florida. The tables are 10 feet apart, blah, 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 blah. And somebody puts himself out to do that. And all of a sudden somebody catches COVID, God knows where, shacking up with somebody. And some lawyer is going to go back to this restaurant and he's going to go in there. And he's going to eyeball and measure these two tables, one of which where my customer was sitting last night is not 12 feet, it's 10 feet. And pretty soon there's going to be a consultant that says, we'll make sure we measure all your tables every day and we'll certify that this thing is COVID-proof level one or two or something. I don't want to go down that road.
COVID-compliant is what it's going to be.
I don't want to go down that road because we've done it in every other place, and I don't think we've helped anybody. We just made industries out of it.
Well, there was a lot there. One, I would say that technology changed all industries. So obviously when people realize that, yes, it's great that we're all connected, but oh, by the way, bad guys can now hack in and steal any information that you have, whether it's credit card information or private information or emails or whatever, then they realize we better put some security and compliance protocols in place, and certainly overstepped in many ways. So I get that. As far as the COVID app thing, all that Jeff was saying, that, and I don't necessarily even agree with him, but was that he would feel comfortable flashing an app that says, just like, for example, for Chicago Sport and Softball, or Social Softball League that I pitched in, one of them that I pitched in, was during COVID, and all they required, now this was just a self-assessment, this was not medically reviewed or not, but all they required was that on the day of the game, you visited a website that they had set up, and they asked you five questions. One, do you feel sick? Yes or no? Two, have you come in contact with anyone that's tested positive in the last 14 days? Yes or no? Three, are you willing to take the risk to play softball? Yes or no? And then four, you know, do you attest that everything you've answered previously is true? And you would take the 10 seconds to do that, and then it would give you a big green screen on your phone that was time stamped saying you're good to play softball that night. And every day, every game, when we took the field, all you had to flash your phone to the umpire, and he didn't actually look at it. It was just a bright green screen. And as long as you had the bright green screen, that was good enough. And both teams had to do that. And it took like a minute, but it was something that you did that showed the other team and the umpire that you're good, and also took liability away from Chicago Sport and Social, that they're like, hey, you attested that you're comfortable playing. We have it time stamped right here. If they did something like that, now I assume the app that Jeff was talking about would actually have to be signed off by a doctor. You couldn't just self assess it. But if they, I assume that's what he was talking about. And, I was just wondering what you guys thought about that. It's clear what you think about that.
Well, when you're talking about a disease that from day one, when I first read the, assessments from South Korea, that's useless because people are only, they're most contagious before they know they have it. So those questions are, you might as well pull them out of your butt.
And I don't think that's true, that people are most contagious before they know they have it.
I have stuff I can show you. As soon as you have any symptoms at all, your contagion starts to drop dramatically.
But either way, that's not that has nothing to do with what
I'm saying. You're not making anybody safe. It's like taking somebody's temperature walking to a hospital.
Hey, which I actually did walk into a hospital on Monday, and just a quickie story about that. And it's only tangentially related. I have my regular checkup with the doctor coming up Friday, so I went in to have my blood work done.
Bend over.
All came back good, by the way. I it turns out I am alive, and all conditions are normal. As I'll go into my doctor's office, he'll look at it, and he'll go, I see you studied for your test very well, and I will tell him, just like I always do, that I cheated off the person next to me. But I went in there, and now this mask I have costs $30. It's you can see through it, and it's silver ion activated, so it's really good. It's a really high end mask for these kinds of activities. And what it does is it allows me to. It's reusable. You can just recharge it by putting it in the microwave, which is kind of cool. But it's reusable, and it allows me to breathe without fogging up my glasses. So I went in there. They took my temperature. They asked me questions similar to what Matt just laid out for softball. And then they said, well, you have to wear one of our surgical masks. So, you know, the surgical mask is one of those little things that are almost like a fan fold. You've seen them.
Yeah, they're blue with the white. N95.
It's just a surgical mask. So I had to take mine off, which is a good mask, and put theirs on, which immediately started fogging up my glasses. Now, what does that tell you? It tells you that the mask they made me wear, unlike the one I already had, is leaking like crazy and creating these little jets where things just get jettisoned outside of the mask, possibly even farther than they would have been without a mask,
right,
and spewed out into the air. So that just tells me we are doing really, really stupid stuff on purpose.
Well, the whole idea, I mean, Mandy and I were talking on the way in, that if you, depending on your bent, and I've never, I guess this has always gone on, Kevin, I just never, in my world, when it comes to trading, it you don't ever see it really. Well, you see it when people lose a lot of money sometimes. You don't see it really because every morning there's an accounting that you don't get to do. I mean, if you give me a bunch of money to manage, and I buy IBM for you, which, you know, maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't, I don't know, but depending on the time and the price, but if I buy IBM for you, and I buy it at, say, 150, and the next day is at 140, I don't get to tell you it's at 160. I don't, the grading takes place away from me. Okay, so it's a different world. I don't get to tell people, like politicians, that I did it, I'm doing the best job going, because it's right there in front of your face. Hey, you bought it at 150, you big dummy, and now it's 140. What the hell's what's that about? I mean, whether or not it was a good buy at 150, maybe the whole world collapsed and every other stock's down 50% and we're only down 10. Maybe it's a relatively, all kinds of things could happen. But the one thing that can't happen is I don't get to tell you that it's a different spot than where it is. So when I look at the numbers of like California or New York or Illinois, and I see some kind of a surge in this stuff, and all of a sudden these guys slam on, you know, masks and all this other kind of stuff, and for the next week or two or three or four, they all spike even higher, and then all of a sudden, 5 weeks from now, when the whole state seems to have already had it, the numbers start going down, and you get some doofus governor up there saying, obviously, it worked, and the reason why it worked is we sent people at home, and man, it's not obvious at all what they did worked or not worked. They made it worse. I mean, in my industry,
The first thing that you see is that the numbers go up for the 2 weeks after you implement the mask mandate, so it couldn't have been working.
Well, when you have, I read some stuff the other day.
The shape of that curve looks exactly like the places where there was no mask mandate. It's not working. It's not doing anything.
Well, I read some stuff the other day, and again, everything you read, I get the feeling, Kevin, as you get more cynical, and Maddie's getting that way too, even though he refused to admit it. You can read from the first two lines of an article what the conclusion is going to be. And the facts are in there only there to support the conclusion, or not all the facts. But I've been reading some stuff, and again, I can't. That now they think that they, whoever the hell they are, something like 5 to 8% of the transferences actually occur in bars and restaurants, and like 75% happen at home. And yet, every single one of the solutions is to jam people back home. I'm like, well, wait a minute, What manner of moron would do that? I mean, I mean, you're not gonna stop people transferring stuff at home, because you can't socially distance in most people's homes. It's like, Mike Rick.
Right, and so the only way you can do that is if nobody from that household can leave. You create the bubble. And the problem with that is some people got to go to work.
Well, you could do what China did. Nothing makes me reach for the air sickness bag more than it's. Why does it always seem like it's some lady? Like it's, and it's not just that, because I don't know if I just. I don't think
it isn't. I mean, there was one going around social media yesterday.
Oh, right.
of this guy, although he was wearing shorts that looked like the kind that a woman would wear.
No, I'm talking about where they talk about how China has handled this so well.
Oh well, yeah.
I mean, that's enough to. Now, from what I understand, and this, I know maybe it's a little harsh, in the Wuhan Pride, they sent everybody home, they locked everybody in their house, and basically in 14 days you could open up the door, and the survivors went back to work, and the bodies went out the back door. I mean, that's a little harsh, but is that pretty much the standard, and what happened?
I've taken your word for it, I don't know that.
Well, I mean, and all of a sudden you saw crematoriums being rushed into the province. And how many million cell phones disappeared? Many numbers. I mean, some incredible number, like 15 million cell phones. Numbers disappeared off the charts. But there's ways to do this that we're never going to do here. But hey, the normal house in the neighborhood I grew up in, I'll give you an example. I don't know if many people know this, and I don't know the full details, but Tommy Thayer, his family, terrific family out of Joliet. I went to Joliet Catholic. His mom, absolutely spectacular lady. I don't know how many people he had in their family, but I think it was a pretty good-sized family. And one of my friends who went to Joliet Catholic and knew, I think, Tommy's brother pretty well. Somewhere along the line, and again, I'm a little fuzzy on this, but somebody on the block had a bunch of kids, and the mother and father got killed in a car accident, something horrible. And the Thayers basically said, had a big team meeting one night and said, we're taking everybody in. Girls upstairs, boys downstairs. That's the way it's going to be. They got nowhere else to go. They're now your brothers and sisters. And his mom raised those kids along with theirs. I mean, tell me how the Thayers exactly were going to socially distance, Kevin, at home.
Well, they weren't. And so what you're doing is, first of all, let's look at disproportionate effects, because a lot of our purveyors of these. Of these orders, like to talk about the disproportionate effects on low income and minorities. So, you know, where is that concentration? What are family sizes in Hispanic households? Tend to have larger families, and tend to not be as a group. You know, individuals obviously are different, but tend as a group not to be high on the economic spectrum. So therefore, they fall into that category of people who have to go to work despite the pandemic. So what are you doing? You are damning them to the spread, because the two big spread vectors are households and healthcare facilities. So you know, just like you said, Kenny said he got it at a hospital. Yeah, a lot of people are getting it at healthcare facilities because people are exposed to it all the time, and then they go home, and then. And also the families, and the less a family, the more concentrated a family is in space, the more likely that family is to have contagion. So there you have it. You know, let's just build policies that screw all the people of color on the lower end of the spectrum.
Well, we got to do that all the time. Anybody who doesn't have any money and okay, hey, what do you think of this new the coronavirus plan? I get two things have happened here, Kevin. I do believe that we can't have everything, all these helper policies, just stop on the 31st or whenever the hell we're supposed to stop, the 26th. There needs to be somewhat of a carryover. I think the 600 a week extra is a little too much. I think the 200 to 300 number is probably makes some sense. I do think that somewhere along the line here, even though the Democrats look like they're getting in, when I say look like they're getting their house, the president say they are in. We don't know about the Senate. The idea that we're tossing around full year tax receipts, like if they're, you know, like if they're, hula hoops or something, not manhole covers. The magnitude of these numbers, I mean, there needs to be some sort of a plan to somehow recoup this. You can't say we're going to, come up with another $1 trillion. And, oh, by the way, we're going to stay closed for another 6 months. And if you do both of those things, your $1 trillion is going to be gone in 4 months. I mean, there needs to be, A, we're going to go further in the hole by helping some people out. And, by the way, here's the way to get out of the hole. There needs to be some mechanism of the two. I mean, the idea that we did this in April or May, the first one, that we're still basically dicking around with it here in December with no plan, and we've basically pissed away two and a half years of tax receipts, and now we're going to go for a third without any sort of a, hey, you idiots, get people back to work, open some stuff back up. I mean, what are we doing here? I mean, there needs to be somewhat of a national goal that based on our...
So what you're saying is that we've had months to learn.
Yeah.
And haven't. You know, haven't even tried. And second is, you know, we're down to the wire on this, so now we're going to have to rush something through. Although, as you've been discussing this week, you know, they're looking at the two bills, the one where we all agree on everything, and then the one that where we still have to work out.
We don't agree on everything. We don't agree on how we're going to pay for it. We haven't even talked about that.
But they, you know, the features that they want to agree
right.
on. Now, we couldn't have done that, you know, 2 months ago, right? We couldn't have said, what do we agree on now? We being Congress, what do we all agree on now? Let's do that. We couldn't do that 2 months ago. Now we can do it. And as both Nancy Pelosi and Dick Durbin have specifically said, the reason they're willing to talk again is because there's a new president coming in. So, you know, thank you guys for your political consideration at the expense of people who really needed help. But, hey, you know, it, kind of typical.
Well, it has more to do with the stuff being that the regular unemployment would expire at the end of December. I don't think even if Trump won, they would still be pushing for the nobody wants that to expire. I mean, there's no way that you're going to do that. Nobody even gets a check at all.
Yeah, not really the point, because if Trump had won, then they would have to accept that inevitability and deal with it. What they didn't want to do was they didn't want to have a deal that might look like a feather in Trump's cap before the election.
Well, what I'm saying is what we need here, whoever it comes from, whether it would have been Trump or Biden, neither one of them in my capability or my thought process are capable of this, what needs to have happen is when the president, which will be, well, I guess Trump will sign this, right? Whoever it is, first of all, the two of them should be getting together on this, much as Obama and Bush got together on a lot of stuff when we had the problems in 2007, 2008, and with the stuff that was going on financially. I mean, they were talking almost daily, as I recall, and a lot of the stuff that was coming through in the financial fix, for lack of a better term. What needs to have happen is somebody needs to come out and say, look, we're signing this bill. Again, this is a temporary bill. We're talking 90 days. All right, and we're going to increase people's $300 bonus a week, blah, 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 blah. But we can't keep doing this. We now have this vaccine. It looks to me, from all the schedules that I've been reading, are that by the end of 3 months, an awful lot of people are going to have vaccines. We have an awful lot of people that have already had it. And at the end of 3 months, there's not going to be a zero chance of you getting it. There's never going to be a zero chance of you getting it, probably, unfortunately. But at the end of 3 months, I want every friggin' school open. I want everybody back at work. Now, if you want to work at home, it's your business, but I want this stuff open. Because we can't just keep doing this. That if somebody thinks they might get it, whole businesses stay home and whole cities stay shut. We can't do that. And 3 months is the number. And I think you gotta do it, Kevin. I honestly do. You're not deserving.
Well, you're not gonna get me to argue with that, that you have to have some kind of, you know, some kind of intent as to when this is all going to end.
It's never going to end
and
when there's zero
and
chance.
Right now it isn't. You're right. It's never going to end because it, you know, because nobody's forcing the issue.
But somebody has to tell people that this thing is going to be part of the flu thing that gets here every 4 years. It's going to be just another one of the flu shots. That's what we're driving it down to. We're not driving it down to it's gone from the planet Earth. We can't do that. So I'll never be able to stand up here and say, I guarantee you, there's zero chance of you getting this or the common cold or the flu. I'm not that powerful, and I never said I was. But by the way, at the end of 3 months, if you want to stay home, stay home. But we're stopping paying you. I mean, the message has to come out there. And I'm not being an ass. I'm just saying at some point, I mean, right now, I can't believe that the difference between, and you can, When I go to some of these places on the south side that are still open, the speakeasies, they'll never say where they are. Kevin, the tension in the room is like, it's palatable. It's like, there's all these people that I'm paying to stay home while I'm working to essentially service them. What do you think? I mean, I as you know, I have many friends that are Hispanic. And these guys are not politically active. They're not anything. But you'll hear stuff that the, man, of course I'm working every day. My wife cleans houses. This person works in the hospital. There's never been a day off any for any of these people. the idea that, that somehow somebody else has a zero chance of needs a zero, and they're very aware of the fact that they're paying people to stay home, and it's getting a little raw, to be honest with you.
And it should.
Yeah. I mean, the idea.
Should.
I mean,
a little revolution would be a good thing.
Yeah. All right. So, the early we're shifting gears here, Paul Harvey. There's no chance of the Irish Clemson game getting canceled. There was some rumors from that coming out of Clemson a week ago.
Well, I don't know if there were rumors. There were some writers saying that they would be smart to cancel because that would guarantee that those two teams are in the 4-team playoff. Whereas if Notre Dame beats Clemson, then Clemson's probably out with its second loss. And if Clemson beats Notre Dame, well, they're probably both in as long as it's a ball game. But if Clemson were to blow out Notre Dame, then Notre Dame might be left out in favor of someone like Texas A&M. So, yeah, strategically, it would be smart. But as far as I know, the game is on 4 o'clock Eastern on Saturday, and I'm planning to watch it.
If you're Texas A&M, I think you got a case against Ohio State. Do you?
Yeah, I think so, too. But the committee that ranks teams apparently does not think you have a case against Ohio State.
Well, I mean, I think Ohio State's a spectacular team, but that's why you play 10 games, because you're liable to get tripped up on a Saturday in Iowa, right? I mean,
yeah, and if Ohio State has a problem with that, or Ohio State's fans have a problem with it, take it up with your conference commissioner. He's the one who gave you the late start.
Well, yeah, and in Michigan, they don't want to play you. God. All right, Kevin, we'll talk to you on Friday, bud. SP Futures now only up 8. NASDAQ Futures up 18. Be right back.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. This is Mark Weber on the board. S&P futures up 8, and S&P futures up 17 and a quarter. We were now, by the way, we're now trading the March contract. It's now front month, even though December is still quoted. What I'm quoting you now is the March. And our Marches are actually a little bit of a discount to the Decembers, like 7 points. So I've got the December S&P is 3702. The March is 3695, but they're both up like 850. Russell, how are you?
I'm good. Does that mean that 2020 is behind us? If we're playing
no, unfortunately. Well, you know, we still have to have a nice Christmas party and a nice New Year's Eve. This New Year's Eve, we're going to celebrate like the world's worst year behind us, or what?
I'll do the same thing I've done the last 20 years. I will most likely, I will be asleep.
Yeah, we sleep the whole day.
My wife likes to remind me that I've never made it to midnight since we got married.
It's midnight someplace. You can watch midnight in Australia, for God's sake.
That's true. Just say, you know, get up, see the fireworks at like 7 a.m. our time, and okay, I'm done.
Well, you know you're kind of going over the hill a little bit when you watch the fireworks in over New York Harbor at 11 o'clock and say that's good enough.
Yeah, I'm not a night person. You should be glad I'm not a night person. That's why I'm always here on time.
Yeah, hey, you have a couple of interesting guests for us today. How about introducing them?
Well, you need to do that.
I can do that. Right. So, yeah.
I was still pulling up my document, and they're probably both on the line now going, oh, my God, well, so what have we got in our
Any chances of having Russell, like, host a show one day? We'll have to be careful with that.
No, that's that. Dude, I'm your Ed McMahon. You know that.
Well, this is going to be fascinating, and we've been looking forward to this for the last couple of days. But we have joining us this morning on the phone as well, referred to us by Russell, is Tom Chippas. He's the CEO of ErisX. And then we also have Jeff Ifra, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, from RSBIX, who are joining us. And these guys are experts in something that I find fascinating, Chief, and that is the idea of sporting event-based futures. And, you know, Chief, explain to our listeners kind of what that means to you.
Well, I mean, and there's been people who wanted to put sporting events on the exchanges really from day one. I mean, Larry Bloom was a big proponent of that. He's one of the original founders of the CBOE and wanted those things on exchanges because it's essentially the same kind of betting as options or futures or anything like that. Not exactly the same, but they're also, but I think what these gentlemen are doing is they're looking for an exchange that professionals in the industry can lay off essentially one against another. I'll just be very brief here because obviously these guys know it better than I do, but anybody old enough to have ever watched the crime story on TV, Ray Luca and the whole bit, it was really the Tony Spilotro story. And when you're use the term bookie, now you're a legitimate somebody who people can wage on sporting events. But a bookie, the biggest, if you got the Bears playing the Lions, say, on a Sunday, and you're in Chicago, well, of course, every idiot's going to bet on the Bears, right? So the Lions 7. And every idiot in Detroit's going to bet on the Lions, right? So now the issue comes down to, as a bookie, you pay essentially 11 to 10. So you make 10%, right? But if all of a sudden 90% of your balance is on the Bears, you now become a big wagerer on the Lions, even though you don't want to be, right? So you go from being a, quote, bookie to being essentially a gambler, which is fraught with peril. So the idea would be is for the guy in New York, or I'm sorry, Chicago, to call the guy in Detroit and say, how about if we each bet half our money with each other and even this stuff out? Well, what happened is the Chicago mob, being Tony Cilantro, essentially started that up in Vegas. And that's what the Stardust, that's why all the lines and everything came out of the Stardust, where people would essentially lay off in Vegas their imbalances and bookies all around the country. And somehow or another, that system has, quote, broken down as people have gotten bigger and bigger. And Maddie and I talked about this on a show 2 years ago, that, you know, I think it's almost illegal, and we're going to find out from our guests. In other words, if somebody puts a $50,000 bet on the Bears at Caesars, they're going to want to move the line. But you can't move the line because other people have the line at, say, 7 or 6. I think it's illegal, and we'll find out in a second, for Caesars to go down and make the, we're going to drop 30 at Bally's because we want to even this out. So I think what these gentlemen are doing is they're creating an industry, essentially within the industry, clearing firm, for lack of a better term, or clearing exchange for these types of wagers. But now I think we should let them tell us. And I just don't want them to end up like Tony Spilatro in a in a shallow grave in northern Indiana. So guys, with that cheery note, well, welcome to the show. I think you're doing it the right way, not like Tony Spilatro did. Welcome. Who wants to speak for Tom? Why don't you speak first? Am I way off in what I'm talking about here or no?
Well, you're certainly right. That's a heck of an intro. Definitely remember the news stories there, having grown up in the suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for having us on. And I think Jeff and I are super excited to talk about this innovation. You know, there's been so much growth in legal regulated sports book wagering since the 2018 Supreme Court decision that this industry is really growing. But the core economic challenge that you just described exists, and it exists in the legal sportsbook world as well too, where you have this regionality that comes into the books, and not terribly different from any other sort of market. You know, you have bids and offers, and you can only adjust those so far until, you know, people don't want to participate in your market. And of course, what happens today when you get that big regional imbalance, if you don't have a competitive line, is you have the consumers choosing to go somewhere else, and sometimes that's illegal or offshore venues where perhaps they don't have the consumer protections. They might not have, you know, real transparency into what's going on there. So these products that we filed with the CFTC on Monday of this week actually try and address this. And we can certainly get into how they do that and how we see it complying with the Commodities Exchange Act. And I think what you're referring to about the challenge moving money between state lines is something that's precluded for these means by the Federal Wire Act. So,
Tom, why is the informal, basically laying it off in Vegas, going back to the small world, why is the informal thing broken down? And why can't FanDuel, if they're 50 grand one way or the other, just make the bet at Bally's in Vegas? I don't think they can they?
That's right. And maybe, Jeff, you want to jump in here, but that's really a function of the Federal Wire Act, amongst others.
Okay. Is that what it is? Jeff, please educate me here.
Yeah, so it's been a really great summary so far. And the Federal Wire Act essentially prohibits transmissions relating to bets or wagers between state lines. And this is something that goes all the way back to Robert Kennedy, which was at the time passed to keep organized crime essentially out of the interstate sports betting business. So, you know, the idea was that essentially, like you said, there are bookies on the street in each of these states, and Kennedy wanted to essentially create a federal hook to go after that. So he essentially passed in 1961, I think, this Federal Wire Act, which has been in effect since then, really been untouched since then. And it's been a tool of prosecutors to essentially go after everything from offshore sports books to, you know, to bookies on the street who are operating across state lines. So when sports betting a couple years ago finally started getting authorized by the states, the one impediment to real, you know, national scalability was that each state had to pass its own legislation, and each state had to make sure that that all bets within the state involved people who were actually located within the state. So if you're in New York City, even though New Jersey is just across the river, you'd have to go through the Lincoln Tunnel and get to the other side before, or at least get to the midpoint, I guess, until you could actually place a bet at a New Jersey book.
That's so bizarre, guys, because in my, well, I mean, I understand you're right, because actually, I have, real quick story, I promise to be brief because you guys are more interesting than me here, but when I was young, I was out jogging one day in Vegas. It would happen, I was so dumb, I didn't realize it was the day of the sixth game of the Boston Lakers series with Magic versus Bird, right? So I decide I'm a big shot. I'm going to put $20 down on the Cubs. So I go to Churchill Downs on a Sunday morning early. The end of this long line, the people in front of me, it was like six grand Celtics, six grand Lakers. I'm going, what are these people doing? Then it dawns on my feeble brain, these guys are all laying off bets from Boston and L.A. They're all in the one casino. And those guys literally was six grand, five grand one way, six grand, five grand another. They were the happiest people on earth. And when I got there with my $20, if ever there was a condescending stare, they looked at me like I was chump change. And you know what? I almost said, I'm sorry, I'm taking up a spot. But I mean, I know just how it used to work. And now you're saying that obviously this was a phone call from somebody, but on a bigger scale, you can't do that. So these places run into this wire act you're talking about. So they really can't lay off, really, right now, is what you guys are saying, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, that's a huge problem. Jeff, say you.
Hello, Jeff.
I was going to say, you know, we were, the states have started to think about laying off, and some of the states, like Missouri, has draft legislation that allows casinos within the state to lay off with other casinos within the state. When we were reaching out to casinos to get their support for these contracts, you know, the one of the casinos said to us, you know, what's the point of that? Everybody's in the same position. We were talking to a casino in Mississippi that sees a lot of action when LSU plays or the Saints because of, you know, neighboring states, and soon Louisiana is going to have legalized sports betting too. So on any given LSU day, those books are upside down, and the manager of the sports book said, it doesn't really help me to reach out to another casino across the way because they're in the exact same position.
Right. One quick question. Does this help? Does it help at all on gimmick bets? Because aren't over half the bets now gimmick bets?
Well, the contracts are introducing, and maybe you know, just very quickly, what we're doing is we've filed for futures contracts. ErisX is a futures exchange and a clearinghouse. So same thing as Chicago Merc or ICE or what have you. We have the same licenses, and we operate you know, an exchange and a clearinghouse. And you know, working with Jeff and his team at RSBIX, we've come up with these contracts, and we've filed for three different types of contracts. Now, I don't think you're going to think any of these qualify as gimmick bets, but we have a money line contract, a points bet contract, and an over-under contract. And that's what we're starting with. We think these are going to be the most interesting and you know, easiest to implement, of course, but also the most widely adopted. So I don't know if that meets your definition of gimmick bets, but I don't think either of those three do.
No, what I'm saying is we, Maddie and I covered, you guys probably know more about this now, wasn't there a day, Maddie, 3 years ago, where all the casinos like lost a fortune because every favorite won or something, the parlay cards?
Yeah, people do prop bets all the time. And whether it's in-game prop bets where you're talking about, you know, different things like who will be the first to score a touchdown, you know, what'll be what's the half point spread at the end of the first quarter, over under rushing yards by a backup running back, different things like that. But then there's also futures bets like who will win MVP before the season starts, who will win rookie of the year, who will win, you know, most improved player of the year, who will win NBA championship. It sounds like you guys aren't going to be taking those futures contracts yet, but maybe in the future.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're starting off, so this is a real innovation, right? No one's introduced a futures contract of this type before, focused on the underlying economic activity of sports wagering. These futures contracts are not wagers in and of themselves. None of us on the phone could trade these contracts. It's not a substitute for gambling because it's not a wager. This is about the sports books and that imbalance we've been talking about and giving a national tool so that the imbalances can be traded on a national futures exchange. So we're starting off with these contracts. These are contracts that are specific, obviously, because of the nature of what they are, to each game. I think as we see traction develop and interest develop and we gain a bit more understanding of what the market demands, you know, we're obviously very open to innovating further and introducing new contracts as long as they comply with you know, the Commodities Exchange Act.
Are you going to have, are you have market makers? I'd love to be one of those.
I mean, we are in discussion with quite a few market makers, and these are, you know, household names in other instruments today, and some of them have experience in the sports gaming world outside the U.S. But yeah, there's definitely going to be market makers. You need them, right, to have a to have a market. You can't have you know, just speculators and hedgers. You need to have those market makers to fill those, you know, differences in time that you find in any market.
Yeah, but you also can't be. Well, I'm telling you what you don't already know, but you can't be 8:30 to 3 during the week. I mean, if what if somebody drops $50,000 on a Bears on a Sunday morning? You guys got to be
no,
open.
You're absolutely right. So, you know, ErisX actually, we launched last year a cryptocurrency exchange, both for spot and for futures. And what's really fantastic about this innovation we've worked on with Jeff and his team is if we didn't have the operating capabilities, the technical capabilities, and the licenses that we have, we wouldn't be able to serve this market. Crypto is 24/7. So we had to build brand new technology that runs 24/7 that can handle this variety of contract types. And of course, we have the operational capabilities, our staff. So we already run 24/7. And it's those attributes of crypto that we've been able to apply now to these sports contracts. Otherwise, we'd be in that exact situation you described, where the market would be closed just at the time you want to put on a trade.
All right, I have a real. You can we can scrub this from the tape if you want, but if you guys become a legitimate exchange, it looks like you're doing.
We are. Okay. We are. We've been live since 2019.
Right,
we
so
have
you're,
the licenses already. We're live and trading.
All right, you're good
not
to go.
New contracts.
So we're not. A question is, why can't my brokerage firm PTI Security take a bet on? And Sunday morning, why is it restricted? Why can't I just do it?
Well, the way that we're rolling these contracts out is that they're going to be available certainly to the sportsbooks operators, and you're going to need to be an eligible contract participant, right? And that is a qualification of the Commodities Exchange Act that relates to the size, amongst other things. But we're really restricting these to folks that have the true underlying economic exposure or qualified market makers. And that's because, you know, this is not a tool for betting. This is a tool for risk management and managing that underlying economic risk.
Sounds to me like 2 years from now it would be the only way I'd want to bet.
Chief, let me get in here. My background, both Chief and I's background is the SIBO, and I used to do a lot of, bringing people around, and sometimes I'd get Brodsky in front of them, and Brodsky would talk about how SIBO was really a price discovery mechanism.
Absolutely.
And that's what I envision you guys being. All of a sudden the Clemson quarterback's not going to play against Notre Dame and the line's moving all over the place. I feel like you guys are going to be a central spot that people can actually get a true outlook as to what people are thinking about different games. Have you thought of, are you going to be sharing the data out there one way or another to get yourself some attention, but also to, maybe start being the de facto, this is the line that everybody's kind of agreeing on regardless of where they're at physically?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think if definitely. You look at any, if you look at the mature derivatives market, at some point mm-hmm. the derivatives actually set the delivery price. Right. I mean, that applies in the physical commodities today for sure. Right. You look at the price of the futures, and that's the delivery price. And I think we apply that concept here that's not going to be the case day one. But as we gain maturity, greater participation, one would expect that the arc bends in the same direction. I don't know. No, Jeff, what do you think with respect to the lines?
Absolutely. It's a great point and a great, quick analysis of this. We definitely want to be able to create an index which essentially doesn't merely just aggregate the lines that are out there, but actually becomes a truer line of where the activity is. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just going to say with respect to the prop bet situation that got brought up before. Yeah, if we're halfway through the college football day. And, a casino sees that a lot of people are, a lot of people have gotten lucky and there's no upset.
because it's the third week of the year. It seems to me that it almost gives them an intraday ability to start to hedge themselves if things are not going their way, just by using the individual games.
It's a tough hedge.
Well, I almost feel like it's sometimes we put on hedges to limit our losses, but it would give them a tool to actually limit losses when things are not going particularly well.
Yeah, I think there's lots of room for further innovation, but we got to get out of the blocks first, and I think we're focused on some contracts that will really have positive impact on the industry. You know, coming back to the issue you talked about at the open of the imbalance, I mean, there's all sorts of problems that creates, and ranging from customers walking away and doing business places maybe they shouldn't, to the inability of that book to take on more business. If they're evenly balanced, you know, they would obviously be in a position to take on more wagers, which if these states are legalizing these businesses, which they certainly have, 26 states plus D.C. and counting, I believe, at this point, making the sportsbooks more efficient is just going to allow them to do more business, which has real positive knock-on impact. And I think once we've demonstrated the efficacy of these contracts, then, of course, we have other room to innovate. I think there's concepts here are being applied from a lot of different places that are going to help these industries get the real benefit here. And it's the innovation of derivatives, and Jeff and I have talked about it. It's about being more efficient with their capital, with their inventory, right? No different than Amazon and other companies have innovated in the physical goods space.
Where do you stand right now, though? You said you were approved in 2019, but I'm sensing you haven't done your first trade yet. Are you kind of never land in the middle, or what?
No. So for the sports contracts, we just filed them this past Monday to be certified. We fully expect that the CFTC is going to ask for an extended 90-day review period of these contracts. No, nothing like this has ever been proposed before. But that's distinctive from ErisX. ErisX has been live in trading since 2019, where our markets are up right now, trading both spot as well as futures. So we've been live since 2019.
But you're not
doing just a new contract.
Okay, fair enough. And what's interesting, and I mean, obviously, Russell and I are going to go right to our trading roots. But it's going to be interesting because if the line is quote 6.5, and there's an imbalance, if the imbalance is wrong, when I say wrong, it's too imbalanced, and I'm going to be a market maker. I'm going to say I'll take the imbalance, but I'm taking it at 7.5. And you're going to say, wait a minute, the line's 6.5. I'm going to say, that's not my problem. It's like IBM was 150 yesterday, now it's 151. Hey, the fact that you sold it at 150 is not my problem. You're going to find this thing moves the line. Right?
I think, it sounds like we're going to have a good market, right? I
mean, well, that's the idea, yeah.
That manifests itself in price, right? I think that's great. My career before coming to ErisX was more on the systematic trading side of things, equities, options, futures, and these sorts of people call it mispricing. I just call it difference of opinion, right? Well, I have one fair value model, you have another. I have one trading time horizon, you have another. Great, we got a market, and I think I'm looking forward to seeing this develop, hopefully in a similar fashion.
I think it's going to be spectacular, right? And I'm going to wager a bet that 5 years from now, PTI securities and futures will be able to access this, because why should it be limited? And why do I have to go to somebody overseas when you guys got an exchange, for God's sake?
How it develops?
Yeah, go ahead, Russell.
Were there any concerns from the casinos that you guys might end up taking business from them? That people just start to use their brokerage account to? And I know that you're saying that you need to be an approved user of the contracts in order to be involved in the market right now. But did any of them envision you switching from helping them manage their risk to actually being a competitor?
Jeff, you want to take that one?
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I don't think that, I mean, we've made it very clear from the beginning that this is to help innovate and help them, not just with balance, but also, as Tom said, with reducing what essentially is the equivalent of inventory risk in this particular market. And there hasn't really been any pushback from the casinos or the books or
let's also remember it's not just them, but also the folks they contract with to manage this risk. So I think all of them understand that this is to help them innovate and help them improve their volume and generate, you know, generate more tax revenue for the states in the process.
So you're envisioning
That hasn't come up.
You're envisioning it that the people that are actually the players, the casinos and those kinds of places, they will be, quote, the exchange members, for lack of a better term.
Participants.
Well,
yeah, exactly.
Well, in the old days, you had to be a member. Participants. So, in other words, if you had a board of trade, it would be the only people that could trade there would be Kellogg's, General Mills, Big Farmers, those kinds of things. It wouldn't be me. It's correct?
Right. So, they will participate, and I was using that more in the royal sense. You're right. So in the technical sense, they will become members,
yes,
of Aris Clearing.
Correct.
And that will allow them to trade on the Aris exchange.
Right.
So these contracts are they're fully funded, right? They're not margin. So they're able to come in directly to a clearinghouse. It's not like perhaps in the past with having to buy into a guarantee fund or what have you, because these are fully funded contracts. So they come in as a member themselves directly.
Okay, well, it sounds like essentially the exchange concept, and I think it's big. Hey, we have to take a break, and understand, Jeff, you have to drop time if you want to hang. That'd be great. Probably talk a little bit about the markets, but I'm sure you can do that too, because I'd like to have a couple more questions. Hey, thank you, guys, and hey, keep us surprised, because this is fascinating. I love it, for one, on a personal level, because, as you can see, I've done some research on it. But I think it's great. I mean, and I suspect you guys will be the line. You'll be the place. But we'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Lower North Bay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 6 now. We're leaking. Well, we're not. We're still positive, but we were up a lot more earlier. NASDAQ futures only up 16. Dow's up 75. Retail sales fell 1.1% in November versus 0.3% drop that was expected. You look at these labor numbers and you look at some of these sales. The double dip recession here is rearing its ugly head. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't know if I hope I'm wrong. I don't think I am. DAX up 209, 1.5%. They're still up there. FTSE up 43.7. They're down from where they were before. CAC round up 19, only 0.3%. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 69.2%. Shanghai down a quarter, call that flat. Hang Seng up 253, are catching up. They were down yesterday, they're up to 4%. Again, review of yesterday. Strong day, Dow up 337. That's 1.1%. S&P up 47, 1.3%. NASDAQ up 155, 1.3%. So across the board rally. Bonds up another 1 basis point, to 0.93. Are we going to make it to 1% in the 10-year? We will at some point. I don't know if we're going to make it this run. Bund minus 0.56. Japan damn near flat at 0.00. Oil down 5 cents, 47.57. Brent down 4 cents, 50.72. Natural gas down 5 cents, 2.62. Gold, it's backed off a little bit, only 29 cents up now. Silver up 49 cents. Copper up 2 cents. This is after these retail sales number came out. The metals kind of dropped a little bit. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We had an earlier crash on the inbound Kennedy, Chief, just before Lawrence, and that's causing a bit of a slowdown if you're coming in on the Kennedy Expressway. No major delays as the accident has been cleared, but that's why you're hitting the brakes as you're approaching Foster heading inbound on the Kennedy. Edens looks good in both directions. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Eisenhower and Stevenson are all quiet. Southside Expressways have been looking good all morning as traffic is light out there. Weather today, lots of clouds, some snow flurries later on today. We haven't had really anything for snow yet, but not expecting accumulation, just some flurries in a high of 34. Right now it's cloudy and 30 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 64 today. Right now it's clear and 58. In sports, college hoops last night, number 13 Illinois had no issue with Minnesota, blowing out the Gophers 92-65. Loyola lost at number 12 Wisconsin 77-63. And it was Northwestern blowing out Quincy 100-48. Chief.
All I'm doing on break here is thinking about being a market maker on this exchange. It's, and you guys, if you've never been one, it gets to the point where you become the buck stops here. I can only imagine that the Bears playing some like nondescript team when nobody cares about the game, and all of a sudden at 10:30, I get a request from Quote or whoever you guys do it, and I'll say I'm 6.5-7 on the Bears, $5,000 up, which I'm sure that's the way the markets would be made, something like that, and all of a sudden somebody goes, where will you take 100 on the Bears? Sit there and go, now I got the problem. The casino does it. I do. What am I going to do with $100,000 on the Bears at 10 o'clock, 2 hours before game time? So to a certain extent, you hope that it's a liquid market to where there's somebody with a standing order that will sell the Bears there, not just me. But you can see where if the market maker, now I just became a casino. All I want to do is be a market maker. I don't think you guys are envisioning that happening, but I can for sure.
Just to backtrack a little bit, you guys want to describe real quick how the contracts are going to work?
Yes, please.
I know you've got money line and then an adjustment for the point spread as well. But I figure that would be worthwhile. And I think our audience actually, because I know when I speak to them outside of the program, they're pretty sophisticated and they'll understand it pretty well.
For sure. Yeah, so we can definitely talk about that. And, to achieve your question about, you know, the standing orders, so we operate a central limit order book. Of course, we're going to be talking to market participants a bit more before we launch to see if that sort of request for quote functionality is something they're looking for as well, too. But, you know, our intent would be to have, bids and offers posted in a central limit order book. But, we'll see how things develop. We obviously could look to support the RFQ type workflow as well. But maybe just taking, you know, the simple sort of money line of, you know, contract to start, right? So, you know, the outcome is based on the outright winner. And the way the contract is set up, the buyer is assuming the away team is going to win, and the seller is assuming that the home team is going to win. So let's just say, you know, week one of the American football season, and you have, member of our exchange, you know, member A is the market maker. Maybe they bought a contract, and member B, the licensed sports book, sold the contract, let's say for $40. So in this example, the market maker, member A, would post on our exchange $400. It's a 10x multiplier as the buyer. And member B would post $600 as the seller. And, you know, let's say this was a game at Buffalo. And if Buffalo won the game, then the contract settlement will result in member B, the seller, receiving $1,000, which is the sum of its initial $600 that it posted, plus the $400 posted by the buyer. And if the game results in a tie, then the collateral is just returned to both sides. No, you know, there's no additional money changing hands.
So the essentially everybody's gonna have a clearing account, for lack of a better term.
Once you become a member, you have the clearing account,
right.
And you're posting your collateral to that account. And really, it's just, again, you know, with the money line contract, it's just simple. It's based on the outright winner. If you're buying, you're assuming the away team wins. If you're selling, you're assuming the home team wins. And then based upon whatever that price is, each contract is a 10x multiplier. So you're posting, in this example, if the contract sold for $40, the buyer's posting 40 and the seller's posting 60 or 400 and 600, I should say. And then if the home team wins, the seller collects the full $1,000 value comprised of its original collateral, 600 and the 400, posted from the buyer.
What is,
so it's pretty straightforward.
Just in terms of history on this, when there's a game, you know, Bears are playing, God knows, who cares. Do the bets come in sort of even during the week, or is it some massive flurry at 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning? I mean, I guess is the market orderly in terms of timing, or is it all last minute? I mean, I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
Jeff, you want to take that one?
We might have lost.
Yeah, it's a good question. And, Tom, I like the way you work the Bills into your example.
Jeff is a Bills fan. He's wearing a Bills hat right now, I guarantee you.
You know, we have another contributor who's a huge Bills fan,
actually.
Too.
I am, actually.
That's great.
I didn't like when it pivoted to the Bears, but it's fine. I feel like we can always use Bills examples because no one gets offended. You know, Everyone's like, yeah, okay, whatever. So it's a great question, and there is a flurry of activity, which is why it was critical that we found a partner like Tom and Aristex, because there's always a flurry of activity before game time for a variety of reasons, including, you know, last minute injury reports. It's a little more acute now because of COVID, but even during a regular season, you see a ton of activity exchanging hands on a Sunday, especially just before game time.
What is the normal? I mean, I've never been this big to walk into a casino 10 minutes before game time and try and drop a $50,000 bet down either there or at FanDuel or someplace. I mean, what normally happens? Do people just take that last-minute big bet and not bat an eyelash, or do they say no? Or they have minimum or maximums?
You know, it really depends a little bit on who you are, actually, to answer that question.
Really?
So, you know, if you look at social media and look at all the big sharps that are out there, their betting limits are crazy. You know, we had last Sunday, someone tweeted that they had tried to put in a 10,000, not exactly the same quantum you just used, but 10,000 on a Sunday before, and one of the casinos told them their betting limits were reduced to 43 cents. So it was a great screenshot to send around, because we think the reason why that phenomenon happens is because the books themselves have gone in
they've gone so far all in on one side that they don't have the reserves available and the cash available to essentially post, you know, a bet like that at that point in time. And that's not the business they believe they're in.
Right.
You know, none of these books, the mobile books, that is, outside of Vegas, are very friendly to activity like that.
Well, they're not.
If they take that bet, it's because they think you're a dope.
Well, they were never all that friendly. I mean, I used to imagine that. You guys don't know me very well, but you can tell I'm pretty darn inquisitive. I mean, I used to go down to the place in, like, in Caesars and say, hey, what if I walked in and wanted to put a $2,000 bet on, like, you know, Dartmouth playing Harvard? And the guy goes, we tell you to walk. we're not even watching it. There's no way that we're taking that bet on that game. I mean, $20, $100 if you're a Dartmouth alum, that's fine, but we're not making policy on that game. I mean, who's getting who? Nobody even there. So, I mean, I think it was always kind of informally enforced. Although, I don't know, when you get real big, how do you, I mean, it's got to be much more formal, I would think.
No, I mean, the markets express their view in price, right?
Yeah. Well, they wouldn't tell you, okay, the line's 10, but for you it's 20. They just say, get out of here. Of course, I didn't have the 10 grand. I was just asking, but. What I'm saying is, I think that you guys are going to really make a big difference in the business.
I just because I had to listen to Mr. Brodsky give the history of SIBO and how it was such a fragmented market, and then it came together with one central price discovery, you know, mechanism at the exchange in the early 70s, and then option trading took off and came into the mainstream. I think having this central risk management tool and liquidity pool for when somebody wants to bet 10 grand and one of the books is actually already leaning one way or another too much, it gives them the opportunity to, for lack of a better way to put it, take more action and become more, you know, maybe become the place that the kind of guys that want to lay down 10, 20, 50 grand, you know, an hour before the game. The guys that are working with you, the sports books that
exactly.
are working with you, are going to be more likely to be able to take that. And I assume that's the benefit that you guys have been selling to the qualified participants that you're going to have. On the market maker side, I feel like it diversifies them, since most of your price action is going to be on the weekend.
Well,
it gives them something to do on Saturday and Sunday. You said you're in that 90-day period right now, and I know that everything is based on what the regulators are you know, up to. But when do you envision you guys will be out there live? And based on that, what sports do you think are going to be the first ones that you'll be taking on?
Yeah, I mean, everything, of course.
I know that's a lot of hypothetical, sorry, but.
Yeah, well, this is scaffolded up on a couple ifs, ands, or buts. Yeah, I mean, look, I think that's what everybody wants to know, no one more than Jeff and I, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So we just filed on Monday. We're waiting to hear back, and we respect our regulator and the process that they need to go through with us. Jeff's team, our team, some outside legal help. We've put together comprehensive analyses, legal analyses, econometric studies. We've really taken our time to be thoughtful about this, and think that we have, you know, as we've been discussing, a great product. So the regulator has to go through their process, and we'll go through that with them and address their questions as need be. But assuming that it goes through that sort of extended review period of 90 days, you know, we'd you know, that could be the outside. We'd hope to be able to launch, you know, still while the football season is going on, if we can. But if not, we're gonna have to work with the dates that we have and see what comes up next. The great thing about these contracts is, although, you know, we've been focused on the NFL, eventually we could file for contracts, of course, in other sports as well.
Well, I think what one of us should have mentioned, Russell came close with the Bill Brodsky, I won't go down that road, but what you guys bring to the table is you take counterparty risk out of the mix. When Russell mentioned the old options business before there was a SIBO, you went to a put and call broker. So if you bought the call, say for instance you had a big winner and you wanted to sell it, well, that guy might give you a horse bleep price to get out. So if you go to a third guy and sell it, you now have essentially sold, but not really, because you've got a long contract with one guy and a short contract with somebody else, and you have contraparty risk. What if one doesn't pay and the other one does?
Yeah.
But you guys,
that's right.
I mean, if I'm a casino and somebody bets $1 million on the Bears, why anybody would do that, and I somehow offload it to the casino down the block, and the next day somebody puts $1 million on the other team, the Lions, and I offload that, I'm not flat. I got two other wagers out there. Would you guys, if I open a contract and close it, I'm flat. So it's a big advantage to somebody trading versus having all these contraparty things all over the place. And that's what
exchanges do. That's right. I mean, we're a clearinghouse.
Yes.
So we're the counterparty. You're not fighting with some guy from Beverly by the Quotron machine.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know, it's a lot more, it's a lot more simple to manage. And it just, again, you remove risk, you reduce friction, you make it more cost competitive for people to participate in these markets. And then it has all the benefits, that we've been talking about.
Yep.
And, you know, just sort of backing up to, you know, earlier, a few minutes ago, talking about who would be, on the sportsbook side, how they view these, you know, do they want to get into that Dartmouth bet or not? You know, the great thing is, you know, ErisX, my firm, has runs the exchange and the clearinghouse will list these contracts. You know, Jeff's firm, RSBAX, has built a whole suite of tools for these sportsbooks to utilize with analytics. And the capability to look at, okay, well, if I do want to put on that Dartmouth bet, what's the market right now? What does it mean? And I think, you know, if you look at it through the perspective of traditional markets, what Jeff and his team at RSBX have done is really built an execution management system for these sports books that have the analytics they need, about the markets, about their handle, and about these contracts so that they can make more informed decisions about really how to manage their book.
Well, and I think the key point is, I mean, in terms of the exchange part, is if somebody makes a trade and I'm on the other side, they don't even know who I am. Their long is with your exchange, which is the beauty of it. And I think what you're alleging or mentioning is that based on the interest and on the handle, there's certain size bets that are appropriate and some necessarily aren't. I mean, right? And an exchange would be better able to deal with that than individual casinos and sports books, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, if you're say a smaller or newer operator and you're looking to grow, you might be a little more risk averse. But if you have access to a risk transfer mechanism, which is what these futures contracts are, you might say, you know what, I'm willing to take that wager. Because I know I can offset that in the market because I can see on my screen what the price of that contract is and I have the analytics to tell me, hey, if I take that Dartmouth bet, then I can come in here and I can sell that futures contract or buy that futures contract depending on what I'm doing, and I'm flat. And
right.
That allows me to continue, you know, printing more business and expanding my handle, which is really ultimately what they should be doing.
Well, that's essentially what we do at PTI. If you want to buy 1,000 shares IBM, we take it to the exchange floor. We don't take the other side of it, right?
Right.
I mean,
right.
And that's the beauty of it. I mean, it's there's a place where people are willing to take the risk, and there's a place where people are willing to execute, right?
Right.
I think this is absolutely
right.
Fascinating. I still wonder what you'd do with the $50,000 first half bet an hour before game time, but that it'll work its way out. There'll be people who are willing to take that, and people who won't. I just wonder your spreads are going
to
move during the week.
Educated.
Yeah, I just wonder how much your spreads are going to move during the week, and if, you know, if I was dumb enough to take $1 million at 7 points, and all of a sudden I gotta pay eight. When I come to the real exchange, I'm sitting there going, I hope this thing doesn't land in the middle. Well, eight wouldn't be a problem, but nine would be, right? Because if it lands in the middle, now I got a problem, right? But then I was the idiot to take the seven in the first place.
I have a question real quick.
Go ahead,
I'm wondering how many potential members are there right now? Because this is still a relatively new industry when you talk about from the legal perspective. And then you have the online versus the brick and mortar. And we obviously know the big ones, the FanDuels and the DraftKings. But now there's so many more coming into play. I mean, is it looking like just a handful of members in the beginning? Or are there more than the average person knows about?
Jeff, you want to take that? I mean, what are we up to now? About 500 licensed sports books nationally?
Yeah, there's, I mean, there's 585 brick and mortar casinos, and so you've got, now within the states that have legalized, you know, there's 22, 23 states plus DC, Puerto Rico, within those states, that have legalized sports betting on the retail and mobile side, you've got about 20 brands in each state, and those brands are run by four or five, say half dozen, platforms. All of those potential members, they all manage risk under their contracts, you know, differently. So, a lot of them, I'd say the majority of them, outsource the risk in exchange for a fixed margin, which is relatively low. You know, what we're hoping to do is basically open that up so that, you know, instead of the books being, the casinos being, you know, saying, oh my gosh, I can't take this risk, just give me the 5% and you guys manage all this, you know, this tool can open all that up so that there's more volume, there's more margin, and that's, you know, that would increase the size of the members. But initially, you know, initially it could be a couple dozen members. Certainly we've reached out to everybody, and you know, everyone's excited about the launch.
This is maybe more of a Russell question, but does your guys' approval, which I'm assuming is forthcoming, does that get you totally out of the 61 Wire Act stuff? I think the answer is yes, but I'd want you to say
yeah,
so.
Yeah, it's very cool. You know, when I first started talking to Tom, one of the first discussions that I had with him is, and I showed him this section, the federal law called UGIA, which was passed literally in the middle of the night in the Bush White House in 2006, and the point of it was to try to chase out some of the offshore foreign online, not so much sports books, but more online casino, online poker operators that were in the United States, and impose penalties on banks and payment processors who processed payments for those operators, who argued that they were operating in a gray area at the time. So what that law also did is it created a bunch of exceptions for what's considered a better wager, or better said, what's not a better wager. And you're all familiar with DraftKings and FanDuel. You mentioned them a few times. The reason that DraftKings and FanDuel came to be was because under that law, there was an exception carved out for fantasy sports. And, you know, the drafters specifically said that a better wager does not include games of fantasy. And that's how, you know, a couple years later, DraftKings and FanDuel were born, relying on that exception. Well, that exception also has another exception that says a better wager does not include any approved contract by the CFTC, and it goes through a whole listing of them. And, you know, Tom and others have explained to me over time that, you know, that 2006 in the middle of the night law that was passed became an opportunity for some of the the boards of trade and others in Chicago to essentially, you know, confirm once and for all that the Wire Act does not apply to their activity, because, you know, in some general broad way, it could be seen as gaming. And so the whole point of that exception, which we're relying on to take us out of the Wire Act, actually had some of its roots in, you know, in this industry.
It's all,
if that makes sense.
It still would be
fascinating.
Still would be illegal for me to try and off it to a casino in Vegas, but it's perfectly legal to go through you guys.
That's right. I mean, we're a futures exchange and a derivatives, you know, we're a derivatives clearing exchange and clearinghouse. And, you know, that is operates under the Commodities Exchange Act. It's federal preemption. And again, these contracts are not wagers. These contracts are futures to offset the economic risk of the sportsbook activities and those that are impacted by the outcome of these games. So these aren't wagers. They're not replacements for bets or parallel to bets. These are about that imbalance we've talked about, and we envisioned down the road even people like stadium operators and others whose, you know, economic livelihood depends on the outcomes of these games in many instances, being able to hedge their risk as well. So just like an interest rate future, the underlying commodity, you know, is in this case the economic activity. So because of that, these are futures, and, you know, it really doesn't fall into that
that Federal Wire Act preemption on or prevention of moving those funds across state lines for purposes of placing wagers. These are not wagers.
Well, I'm all for you guys. What else would you like to say that you haven't yet? We got a couple of minutes.
I mean, I think I'd like to say that we're really pleased at the amount of interest in this. I think as this industry has continued to grow, the economic opportunities become obvious, and I think that perhaps, you know, views, political and otherwise, in the past about what this business is, hopefully have matured and changed, and we think that these products are really positioned to help this legalized industry grow. I mean, you don't have to look very far to see the demand. I mean, I know that, you know, taking the train from New York to Washington, you can't hit a stop in Pennsylvania that doesn't have an ad for sports gaming. It's extremely popular, and I think it's incumbent upon the derivatives industry to offer these types of products because they've allowed so many other industries to grow. You know, the innovation of derivatives has helped everything from agricultural to airlines to mineral production, you name it. There's no reason that this innovation that operates in a safe and regulated manner can't help this industry grow.
Well, if you're going to let
the message I want to make sure it gets out there.
If you're going to let the industry happen, and I think you want it to happen as legitimately as possible, and you guys would definitely help that. I don't know if there's any. Do you guys have a?
That's the goal.
Is there a place? Is there a physical spot that you guys have? I'm not asking if you have a trading floor, but is there a place, or is it all ether?
No, I mean we're fully electronic market, so you know there's no pit, there's no Quotron machine to lean up against. It's all electronic, you know the ErisX is a Chicago company with offices in New York as well.
Well, today, how often would you have to disinfect the Quotron machine with everybody leaning on?
probably a lot more even than back in the day, I'd imagine. Yeah.
Well, nobody cared or knew back then. You guys, it's been fascinating for me, and I sure hope the listeners loved it. And Russell, thank you, and we'd like to have you guys back with the progress. I don't want you to predict, but let's say the minute you're approved, let's have you back. How's that?
Love to do it.
All right, buddy.
Thank you.
SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 27. Way less than they were earlier, but still up. We'll be back at tomorrow with Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.